All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. That we passed around the set-aside prayer. That's what we'd like to start with. Actually, let's start with the serenity prayer first, because that'll get us quiet down, right? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Good morning, everyone. My name is Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And this is the body image workshop. So if that's not where you think you are, then now's a good time to leave. but even if it's not where you think you are, and we're happy to have you stay. We passed around the set-aside prayer, and we'd like to start with just saying the first paragraph of that together. God, please set aside for me all the things I think I know about you, me, AA, OA, the 12 steps, recovery, and especially spiritual matters, so I can have an open mind for a new experience of all these things. So the rest of this is just a reference for you if you want to know a little bit more background about where it comes from and how it's connected into the big book. So this body image workshop, Susan and I have done, I don't remember, I lost count of how many times. And what we do is we take you through all 12 steps in reference to dealing with your body image, your relationship to your body. And like we have found in our recovery, there's nothing like working the 12 steps on something to get you one step closer to freedom. So you're going to be doing, can you not hear me? Is that better? Yes. Okay. Thank you. So you're going to be doing most of the work. So if you're kind of hoping to just like chill, which you're totally welcome to do, but you'll be doing most of it. As we go through, we'll be reading from different readings. We'll reference them. If there's something that you want us to go back and mention, just, you know, raise your hand or whatever. There'll be writing. You'll be sharing. All this is, you know, nobody's forced to do anything or whatever. This is to the degree do you want to work this. So we'll start first. Susan and I will give a little bit of background on our story, and then we'll get right into step one. Any questions so far? Awesome. Any pens? I don't. Yes. I don't know.
We'll ask. Somebody is here representing the committee. Yeah. So. She's going to go and ask. Thank you. Thanks, Liz.
Okay, so it sounds like she'll do what she can. Okay. So he would just give me 8 minutes or something. So
you want to start with your story?
Yeah, or do you want to start with yours?
It's okay. Whatever you want.
What else do we start with?
No, just our story.
Oh, okay.
And then you go to step.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, so as I said, my name is Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Colleen.
Let's see. So I have been abstinent since August 4th of 2002, so about 17 and a half years of abstinence. My top weight that I know was 311 pounds. I've been maintaining about 160 to 170 pound weight loss probably for about 15 years or something like that. And, you know, what's interesting about this area of body image is it wasn't something I really put a lot of thought into, probably because I was fairly disconnected from my body for most of my life. I had labeled it as bad and wrong, and it was the problem. So my whole life, everything was like, well, that's because I'm fat. It really had nothing to do with the way I was eating. That I was doing in order to survive, although I didn't understand that at the time. It really just was about having as much protection around me as I could possibly gather, and the best way to numb myself from actually feeling. Because one of the strange things about feelings is they're something that we understand in our mind or don't understand, but they're also very energetically present in our body. So to, first of all, I didn't really have much language around it. I knew what was acceptable and what wasn't acceptable. And I was very, I was labeled as being very dramatic as a child. I think I just had very big feelings and I didn't know what to do with them. You know, it's funny. I watch, I have a niece who's 8 years old now, and I remember when she was like four. And when she was walking around the house and stuff, my brother-in-law, like, going, I don't even know what to do with all this. And I said, it's okay, she doesn't either. You know, but, like, I saw that. Like, yeah, that's probably a little bit what I was like, you know. And, you know, the people that raised me did the best they could with what they knew how to do. So I just learned really early on that it was really about, like, just getting through and biding my time. And things got really unsafe really early on, so I needed a way to take care of myself. So I used the food and essentially used my body to do that. And I'm really grateful that I did, because if I hadn't, I would have looked for more detrimental ways. Like, it is no mystery to me. I would be dead today if the food hadn't worked. You know, because I would have sought out alcohol and then heroin and then whatever else was what I could get my hands on. And if I hadn't done that, I probably would end up being killed by somebody because I was, you know, whatever, attacked or something, because I put myself in a precarious situation. So growing up, you know, a lot of how this piece of it showed up for me was just a lot of, like, holding my breath all the time, constantly having to make jokes about my body because, God forbid, you make a joke first. You know, I thought, well, if I could just be self-deprecating enough, you know, then whatever it is I think you're thinking about me, by the way, you're not thinking about me. But I didn't know that because I was thinking about me all the time. Why wouldn't you be? So, you know, like, it was all about, again, just creating more and more distance and not letting people in. And I had a very confusing relationship with touch. And so that was very unsafe, even safe touch, because it was all just very confusing to me. So when I got into program, I had reached a point where I could no longer deny how big I had become. Like, I really had, I often saw myself as like a reverse anorexic. Like, I'd look in the mirror, but I wouldn't see the actual body that was there. I just, in my mind, I was thinner, you know. And then on the rare occasion that I, like, saw a reflection of myself when I was out and about in the world, I was horrified. I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And I didn't keep a lot of pictures. Now, I tried to sort of embrace all that stuff. Like, I did some plus-size modeling, and I bought a book on, like, living large and loving it, and I didn't love it, but I was still living large, you know. And, you know, so, like, I tried, but I just, it had gotten to the point where it had become emotionally, physically, mentally, and spiritually too painful to continue. And that's when I found myself in these rooms. And what I saw was people who had a light in their eyes. I mean, it's like all the stuff they talk about in the literature, and a peace and an ease that I had never had before. And for the first time in my life, there was some concrete sense of having a safe place. And that really, I believe, is what opened up the gateway for me to be willing to do something with my food. Because prior to that, I was like, get away. I don't even want to talk about this, because that was my lifeline. Like, there was no doing that. And then, you know, strangely enough, once I reached a healthy body weight, then it was like, how do I even function in this thing? Like, my whole physical experience had changed so drastically. And I had things like extra skin. And I was like, how do I even operate in the world? Like, now they don't have all this protection around me. And so, you know, working the steps, obviously around the food, but also around just like my day-to-day experience of what it means to live and walk in the world in a and a healthy body weight. And so what do I do now that I don't have this extra protection? I have to use my voice. And how do I do that in a kind manner? How do I do that in a way that doesn't create more wreckage or just keep people even further at bay? Because left to my own devices, even if I'm not overweight, like, I can still do the same damage. Like, it's all about what's going on in between my ears and what's happening in my heart. And so in working these steps as the things that we talk about and then we'll share about, were really just sort of incremental things along the way that I found myself doing because I had to. Like, just like I was in such a desperate place about the food, I was like, if I don't figure out a way to function in this life that I have at this body weight and feeling safe enough within myself, like, I will go back. I will find a way back to my old form of protection. And so I had made a decision that it wasn't protecting me from what I thought it was protecting me from. And when I made that decision, that's when everything began to change in my recovery. And so it was clear enough to me that each day, one day at a time, I choose to live in the life and in the world that I'm in today. So thank you for letting me share.
Hi, everybody. I'm Susan, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I want to welcome everybody here. We hope you get a lot out of this workshop. I celebrated 33 years of abstinence. And thank you. You know, my old sponsor used to say whenever I achieved something, and she would say, "What a wonderful thing that says about your relationship with your higher power." You know, she never let me take credit for anything. And but she was very wise, and it kept me very humble, and it's the truth. So I got started. They started making fun of me for my size when I was six. And what happened was I started hating myself and hating my body. I have a son who, he's 10 now, but when he turned 6, I remember looking at him thinking, how does somebody so young have that kind of hatred for themselves? You know, it was really kind of startling to me when I saw that. But I did, and that was kind of my life, really. I was put on my first diet when I was 10, and from then on, every time I'd wake up in the morning, I would think, what diet am I going to be on today? You know, that was my thing. What diet am I going to be on today? And I remember looking at my friends who were all cheerleaders, and I would watch them eat, you know, just, I was so jealous. You know, they ate cheeseburgers and French fries and all that. Well, I ate them, but only in private because I did not eat in public. And I remember once we were going to the movies, and we were at this restaurant, and I ordered a dill pickle with my Diet Coke. And I called that lunch, of course, in front of other people. But it was a tough existence because I didn't have anybody to talk to. I really, I just wasn't safe in my house or with anybody else. I was basically, I don't want to get too dramatic here, but I was basically betrayed by every adult in my life. And I kept things to myself. So when my mother said, "You're fat, you need to be on a diet," I said, okay, and tried to do the best I could to please her. And my diet actually lasted for 5 days, which was quite an achievement, I thought, until the weekend came and Wise potato chips came into the house. So that was my life. That was my life. I overcompensated by smiling all the time, being nice to everybody, and, you know, just, I can't tell you how many best personality contests I won. But I always was waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder and say, "We really know who you really are. We know So you can stop this whole act because we know you're not worth anything. I had a bout of bulimia for about 10 years. And the thing that I find so interesting about my bulimia was it wasn't in our culture yet. This was in the early 70s, and nobody talked about bulimia, and nobody talked about anorexia. There was nothing. And my roommate, this was in New York, and you know, she said to me, I have found a way to eat whatever I want and not gain weight. And this was kind of like the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life, before or since, really. That just that sentence. it's ridiculous. But she showed me, and you know, that was like great. And what happened is, I think my first year of being bulimic, I might have binged and purged maybe two times or something. And honestly, if it just stayed at two times a year that I did it, I would not be, maybe not even here. I wasn't powerless yet. But they tell us, and I'm here to say it's true, that we have a progressive disease, and within like 7 years, I was doing it 10 times a day and really kind of a prisoner of my home. I used to wonder what people were doing, my friends were doing on the weekends when I was just home or going back and forth to the market. And that continued, like I said, for about 10 years, 15, no, 10, year, 10 more years. And all of a sudden, one day I woke up, I couldn't do it anymore. So I kind of accepted it. That was fine, except I kept eating like a bulimic, you know. Everything was a binge. Everything was a binge when I was alone. When I was alone, I would go to like dinner parties or whatever, eat like that bird, you know, have my little pickle. But then on the way home, I'd stop at the market. I don't know if you people have 24-hour markets where you live, but very helpful, you know. So anyway, I heard about Overeaters Anonymous. I had a friend. My friend Gary came here. He lost 100 pounds, never gained it back. Unfortunately, he's not here with us today anymore, but he died abstinent, and he was a great example. He was especially a great example when I went out to lunch with him one day, and he had a roll in butter in front of me, and I thought, oh, this will never do for me, you know, can't eat bread in front of another human being. But he did. He was a great example of the program. And I came in. I went to 5 meetings in 5 days and fled because of all the God stuff. You know, just didn't sit well with me. During that time, I got a big book, and I read it, and I hated all that, you know, creator, providence, he, blah, blah, blah. And it made me so uncomfortable that I threw it out the night that I read it. I did not want anything to do with it. But about 3 years later, I was given the gift of desperation, and I was willing to do anything to get me out of the prison between my ears. And so I came in, I came back. I knew that they were going to talk about God. Nothing changed. I didn't care. Okay, I'll believe, you know, whatever. When they said the steps were a suggested program of recovery, I interpreted it a little differently. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to work step 1 and step 12 because they don't mention God in it. I thought that this was allowed. And, you know, so I knew I was powerless and I was willing to tell anybody about it. That's my program. But I got a sponsor. I did everything she said to do. I got some meditation books. I read everything, you know, every morning. And just kind of pretended I believed in a God, basically. And after all that pretending, I was touched by a higher power, and I did start believing. And it wasn't until I was on the third step that I became abstinent. And what can I say about Overeaters Anonymous that I haven't said before? I love Overeaters Anonymous. It gave me a life. It gave me a life that I have today that who would have thought in a million years? I have a great life. And Colleen knows. And it's just amazing. And like she was saying, if I stop doing these things, my disease will come roaring back. You know, they say, you know, the disease is in the next room doing push-ups. And that's true. So I have some things that I do every day. And I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I do really well. But I keep trying. So thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's me. Step one. I'm going to do step one. We admitted we were powerless over compulsive eating, that our lives had become unmanageable. So basically what Colleen and I have seen and have experienced for ourselves, that many of us have an obsession about our bodies just as much as our obsession about food. And, you know, compulsive food behaviors and compulsive eating. And we kind of... We came together, I would say through Providence, one of the words I hate it, but we came together, I guess, about 14 or 15 years ago, and she was doing something, I was doing a different thing, and somehow they all fit together. So what we're going to do is basically I'm going to quote from the books. So pretty much everything I say, everything that I read here is from our literature. And the OA book, and I apologize, I only have the old OA book, that says, only an honest admission to ourselves of the reality of our condition can save us from destructive eating, and that our lives have become unmanageable. So as long as we think we know what's best for us, we cling to our habitual ways of thinking and acting. Yet these ways of thinking and acting got us into the unhealthy, unhappy condition we were in when we came to OA. And I hear a lot, a sick mind cannot cure a sick mind. And there are three people who really gave us what we have and why we're sitting here today. Dr. Silkworth, as many of you know who he is, he was the first person to define what we have as a disease, which I found in the beginning a great relief that, you know, I wasn't the pig that I thought I was. Dr. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, he said the only time he's ever seen somebody break an addiction was when they had a full psychic change. What a genius, you know? And then there was the Oxford groups, which was... In those days, like New Age, you know, it was a new way of thinking about religion and a new way of doing things. They actually had six steps, but they were about admitting, you know, who we were, making restitution, writing down all our sins, you know, things like that. So really, our program, Bill Wilson, I think, was a genius, my opinion, and... But he combined all these things, and he gave us the 12 steps. And but he will say, you know, it was divinely given. But Dr. Silkworth, Carl Jung, and the Oxford group are really the reasons that we're here today. So when we are powerless over our compulsive eating, we asked ourselves why we shouldn't apply human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. And we couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. That's from it's called The Bedevilments in the Big Book on page 52. So we have writing that we're going to do probably... after the steps, after we go through them. So this first writing is, how have you obsessed over your body? How has that affected your life, socializing, going to the beach, whatever, intimate relationships, and how you've been powerless over it?
So we'll give you 3 minutes for that.
Can you repeat
that? Sure. Okay. How has the way you have obsessed over your body affected your life? How have you been powerless over it? And some examples are socializing, going to the beach, intimate relationships, confidence in yourselves. So you have 2 minutes just to write a few things down of how you've noticed that that affects you. How has the way you have obsessed over your body affected your life? How have you been powerless over it? And some ideas are socializing, going to the beach, intimate relationships, confidence in yourselves. Powerless means we can't quit. No amount of self-control can cure us. So you have 2 minutes to do that.
I just want to add one thing to this. Page 15 on Voices of Recovery, in Voices of Recovery.
And it says, I am powerless over fixing myself, but I am not helpless. So I like that. What's that? Page 15 of Voices of Recovery. So we're going to move on to step two. Step two is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. The operative word, thank you, is sanity.
Everybody needs paper.
Yeah, we've got paper up here now. Thanks, Susan. Okay. So if our lives are unmanageable and we need to be restored to sanity, why not apply this part to our lives also? So what do we need to do this? Page 47 in the big book asks, okay, thanks, thank you. Do I now believe or am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? So really all we need is even willing to believe in that. And page 16 of the OA 12 and 12 tells us how we do this. Yeah, how's that? Can you hear me now? Okay. In the OA 12 and 12, it tells us how we do this. We could begin to do this by asking ourselves what exactly we needed and wanted God to be to us and God and to do to us and be us, God to be us. Then we acted as if God were really exactly what we wanted and needed our higher power to be. We became willing to let go of any concept about God which wasn't helping us to recover from compulsive overeating, and we had to replace our old ideas about God with a faith that worked. So coming to believe was something that happened as we begin taking action, which others told us has worked for them. So in the AA 12 and 12, it tells us that sanity is defined as soundness of mind. Here's a question for you to write on. What does sanity look like to you with regards to your obsession to your body and how you think about your body? So what does sanity look like to you with regards to your obsession with your body or how you think about your body? We have 2 minutes for that. What does sanity look like to you with regards to your obsession with your body or how you think about your body? What does sanity look like?
These are the only notepads I have left, so you may have to share. Who doesn't have paper? Could you read the definition of sanity one more time?
Sanity is soundness of mind, as they tell us in the AA 12 and 12. Thank you, Susan, for a great job you're doing for us.
Okay.
We have pens, too, if anybody needs one. Can you raise your hand if you need a pen? All right.
Okay, so now we're going to go on to step three. And step three is we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. In the big book on page 60, it says that being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. And then the question says, just what do we mean by that and what do we do? And so it says the first requirement is we'd be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So all my thinking about my body, my praying at the end of a binge at the night, like as I was falling asleep, touching every part of my body, praying to God make me skinny in the morning, didn't work, okay? And what I began to see is that I needed a sense of freedom. It talks about, you know, soundness of mind being the definition of sanity. And to me, that means peace of mind, so that I'm not doing jumping jacks in my head about my body. In the Voices of Recovery on page 223... it says that... from the OA 12 and 12, we now say yes to this power, deciding from here on to follow spiritual guidance and making every decision. And this reflection is very apropos. It says, in every decision, my mind went to instant rebuff mode upon reading those words. Oh, sure. I could see the need to surrender my will and my life over to a power greater than myself in food-related matters. Just how many fruits can I dice up really small and cram on top of my cereal and still remain spiritually fit? How many trips to the salad bar constitutes a normal meal? But every decision, whether to ask for a raise, to take on a new sponsoree, to read Lifeline or TV Guide, to go to bed with this attractive stranger, to phone my mother or my sponsor, to tell this jerk I'm plenty miffed, in all the small and large decisions that make up a day, that make up a life. The words on the first page of step three gazed back at me serenely. I hesitated and then totally capitulated to their injunction, and I've never regretted that surrender. So in the same way that I had learned to ask God to come between me and the food before the food comes between me and God, I had to learn to ask God, you know, help me see my body as you see my body. Help me not villainize my thighs this morning. Like whatever that small thing is, help me walk into this work meeting not thinking about how I'm dressed and whether or not it's acceptable or I look okay, you know? So there were all these different areas of my obsession about my body where I needed God to show up in a particular way. So the question is, what would you like your higher power to do for you in the area of your body obsession? What would you like your higher power to do or to provide for you in regards to your body obsession? And a third time, what would you like your higher power to do for you in the area of body obsession? You have 2 minutes for that.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so now we're going to go on to step four. Step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So in the AA 12 and 12 on page... That doesn't
not
work.
Working.
You can't hear. Okay.
All right.
Well, it's a nice thought. Oh, no. Thank you for letting us know you can't hear us. It kind of defeats it.
Can you take that out? Magic. And let's put it like that. Can you do that? Can you hear us? No?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to, it's going to topple over. We'll see. I think
that'll work. How's that?
It's going to fall down. It's
all right, yeah. Okay.
Now, unless it comes up from the table. It's like, that's okay.
All right.
It's okay, we'll hold it.
Yeah, we'll hold it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You must have been in the AV club in high school, no?
Okay. All right. So, step four. I feel like I should go into a lounge act or something. All right. So, as I was saying, in AA 12 and 12 on page 49, pride says you need not pass this way. Fear says you dare not look. But the testimony of AAs who really tried a moral inventory is that pride and fear of this sort turn out to be a boogeyman, nothing else. So the point of that is just to remind yourself that as you're doing your four-step writing, that if you get that sort of thing of like, oh, that doesn't apply to this, or that's not a big deal, write it down. As it tells us in the big book on page 64, step four is about, it's a fact-finding, fact-facing process to discover the truth. And nothing but thoroughness and honesty count. So it's not a condemning. It's not a what's your problem. It's not a, oh my God, I'm so bad. You just write it down. So we have a handout for you. And there's actually two pieces to step four. And you'll get 10 minutes to write for each. So the first part is a history. And there's a series of prompts on the page. And then the second part is the present. So that's on the back side. And there's a series of prompts. So you'll get 10 minutes for the history part and then 10 minutes to write on the present part. Now, those prompts are there simply to provide a guide. So for the perfectionists, if anybody of you this applies, it's not about answering every single one. Otherwise, you have failed. Okay, it's about using them to sort of point you in a direction. Like, you may already know, like, your history of, like, your stuff with your body obsession. It may just flow right out of you. Others of you might look at stuff and go, oh, that's right, you know. So it's just about that. So we're going to give you 10 minutes to do that writing on the history.
We see some hands back here, people who don't have. Anybody have extras?
No, it's two-sided.
It's two-sided, yeah. But just do the one side right now for your 10 minutes.
Part one.
Just part one. Extra? Catherine has an extra. Okay. Everybody set? All right. 10 minutes.
Okay, so now you're going to flip over the page and you should see part two, which is the present. And so I'm going to give you 10 minutes to do the writing on that. Okay, for the last part of the inventory, and you're going to have 5 minutes on this, You're going to draw a depiction of your body. Now, my artistic skills lend itself to about a stick figure. So we're not talking about, you know, creating something that will hang in the Louvre. Or anywhere for that matter. But some kind of simple depiction, okay? And you only have 5 minutes, so it's not about drawing every etch of your face and then, like, there's a void below that. And what you're going to do is you're going to create this little basic depiction of your body, and then on the parts of your body that you like, you're going to draw, like, a heart or a star or some kind of positive symbol. And then on the parts of your body that you don't like, you're going to draw a little X. And no ixnay over the whole body, okay? I know where your head goes. I've been there. So even if all you like is like the nape of your neck, then put a little star or heart on that. Or if you like your right finger, I don't care. Find one thing. So you're going to have 5 minutes to do that. Okay. So take a deep breath. You just accomplished a fourth step. Woohoo! Yes. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to do step five, and there'll be sharing involved. I'm going to read something about the step, and then after that, we will have a little break, okay, after step five. So step five says we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So it does say in the big book on page 72 as it begins step five, it says this is perhaps difficult. So if you are feeling uncomfortable, if you're feeling antsy, you want to get distracted, your mind is wandering, you're in the place you're supposed to be, okay? So it also tells us in the A 12 and 12 on page 55 that all of A's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. So it tells us that taking a fifth step brings us closer to that sanity, to that soundness of mind. So what you're going to do, you're going to find a partner, okay, and you're each going to have 5 minutes to share, and you're going to share whatever you are comfortable sharing. We always recommend that, you know, if you're not here with your sponsor, that maybe you share any of the writing that you do today. If you don't want to share on the four-step step, maybe you can share the first or second step. You don't have to show anybody your picture. You can show them your picture. It's all up to you. For those of you who are listening, your job is very simple. You nod and acknowledge. As many millions of answers that you have for their situation, kindly keep your mouth closed. Because as we all know all too well, that unless we come to those resolutions for ourselves, they usually don't stick. So the best place of compassion and kindness you can be is just to listen with a kind heart. Can we agree to that?
Yes.
Great. All right, so go ahead and pair up. And then we'll start the clock, and it when the 5 minutes is over, I'll say switch, okay? And then we'll take a break. Yes, what's the question? We just have 5 minutes for each person. If there's more time that you need, you could go into the break, but... Oh, yeah. Okay, raise your hand if you do not have someone to share with. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start.
Let's see that. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. We are on step six. And step six says that we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And a willingness to change is the essence of step six. And it tells me, I love this one, in Voices of Recovery, change is always frightening. Excuse me. Growing and changing is what OA is about. Miracles and spiritual awakenings have come as a result of my slow growth. I wanted to live in the insanity of doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. It was too scary to change. Thank God I stayed around until the miracle happened. Step 6 was my guide to a willingness to change. I'm grateful I became willing to surrender to the process. I welcome opportunities for growth and recovery to do things differently. That is change. My program allows me to take care of myself, to grow, improve, work with others, get out of myself, and make a difference in the world. I open myself to God's will for my life. I will always be a compulsive overeater, but with my higher power, I have the ability to change. That's from Voices of Recovery, page 263. In the AA 12 and 12, it tells us that this is a step that separates us from the men and the boys. And I will tell you that for many years, I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I thought, why aren't they saying this about a fourth step or a fifth step? What is the big thing about step 6 that makes it so different? And what they tell us then is the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is God, meaning I have to get out of myself and go to God. Also, I read something about this that that really said that step 6 is the first time that we're going to be trying to change ourselves in the present, that the fourth and fifth step were about our backgrounds and our histories, really, and that step 6 was for today. So in the OA 12 and 12, it says, being entirely ready means that we are completely willing to recognize and let go of our defective behavior patterns and to let God change us as God will. We don't set a timetable or method for these changes. When and how our defects are removed is entirely up to God. But, they tell us, every character defect we have today has been useful to us at some point of our lives, and we need to recognize that. Next, we need to recognize that each of these old tools for coping with life has now outlived its usefulness. Step 6. We're going to go right to step 7. We're entirely ready to have to remove these shortcomings. Step 7 is about humility. And, you know, we see lots of different definitions of humility throughout the AA literature. But it says in step 7 in the AA 12 and 12 is a desire to seek and do God's will, which I love. For just so long as we were convinced that we could live exclusively by our own individual strength and intelligence, for just that long was a working faith in a higher power impossible. So we give them up because we enjoy moments in which there is something like real peace of mind. To those of us who have hitherto known only excitement, depression, anxiety, in other words, to all of us, this newfound peace is a priceless gift. So we use God to remove our defects the way we did with food. Humility is recognizing that we can't, and only God could. I needed the food. I needed to be obsessed with myself mentally and physically. This is me. Now I have a higher power. The seventh step, also we're going to the AA 12 and 12. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us, with humility as our guide, to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. The whole emphasis of step 7 is on humility. It is really saying to us that we now ought to be willing to try humility in seeking the removal of our shortcomings, just as we did when we admitted that we were powerless over compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace by which such a deadly obsession could be banished, then there must be hope for the same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. And lastly, in the OA 12 and 12, we need to recognize that each of these old tools for coping with life has now outlived its usefulness. Only when we realize they are costing us more than they are giving us do we become entirely ready to be rid of our characters of defects. So we have a handout for you. And yes?
The second to last one you read, it was from the AA 12?
Yes, it was from the AA 12 and 12. I just changed alcohol. No, that was the last one. The last one. But the next to the last, yeah, that's on the AA 12 and 12, page 76. You're welcome. Anybody has any questions about it? I've got them all noted. So we're going to get a list of possible defects you might have. It's just a prompt to click something in your mind, and it's a list of my defects. So we're going to write about everybody. How's everybody doing with paper? Okay. We're going to write about part one, what was the benefit of having this defect? What you can do is just pick a defect. You certainly don't have to write a whole list of them. Just one defect. What was the benefit of having this defect? Part two, what is it costing you to have it now? Everybody get that? The second part, what is it costing you to have it now? Ten minutes for this. Sure, I'd be happy to. What was the benefit of having this defect? What is it costing you to have it now? I see a hand. Is that for a piece of paper? Okay. Okay, everybody have paper? Okay, 10 minutes. Okay. After writing, we say, and this is from the OA 12 and 12, what we can do while waiting for God to remove these defects is act as if they have been removed and make every effort to act and live by the principles embodied in the 12 steps. I like that. So we're going to move on to step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So we've taken a little bit of literary, poetic license with this step because we are not going to discuss all people. We're going to discuss ourselves. So I know you're not supposed to do that, but we're doing it. So what is an amend? OA 12 and 12. To amend something means to change it. We complete our amends for our wrongful actions of the past by changing our actions in the future. The purpose of amends, that tells us in Voices of Recovery on page 181, we change to learn attitudes of mercy and forgiveness. Love your imperfect self and your imperfect world. For if you cannot love the way it is, you will suffer from eternal loneliness. The ability to love yourself and those around you is a gift from God that enables you to live fully, bravely, and meaningfully in an imperfect world. So, yes. Oh, wait, 78. Okay. For this day today, because I was always taught, you know, I make amends for my actions, not my thoughts, because everybody would be dead, they say. So, but today we do, as we're talking about ourselves. So we make amends for ourselves for our actions and our thoughts. Okay. So examples for me of ways I've harmed myself because of how I thought about my body was not going to the beach or swimming in a pool, not going shopping because I didn't like my size and I was always going to lose weight so I could go shopping, closing myself off from intimate relationships because I couldn't bear the thought of anyone touching my fat. So we're going to move to step 9, which is, I just wanted to say about the writing. I forgot to say this about the last writing you did, step 6 and 7. We're not sharing that today, but please share it with your sponsor. And if you don't have a sponsor, then share it with a trusted friend. All right. So step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So the goal of this step, they tell me in OA, page 76, the purpose of step 9 is to clear away guilt and ill will so we may establish a better relationship with people whom our lives have touched. In making amends, we'll need to acknowledge the specific harm we've done, apologize and make appropriate restitution, and change our behavior toward them in the future. So they tell us how to make amends to ourselves. To amend something is to change it. We complete our amends for our wrongful actions of the past by changing our actions in the future. This is especially important when making amends to ourselves. Only by permanently changing our harmful attitudes and actions can we make it up to ourselves and our loved ones for the hurts of the past. So maybe you have guessed what your writing assignment is. You're going to write a letter of amends to yourself in regards to how you think about your body and your body image. How much time? We have 5 minutes. Everybody get it? Okay. Repeat it. Yes. You're going to write a letter of amends to yourself with regards to how you've treated yourself and thought about yourself in regards to your body image and your body obsession. Okay. And for today, on page 66, it says, today I am worth enough to give myself the best thought, the best care. I guard my abstinence and my program as though they were my dearest possessions, and they are. Wherever I go, I expect a good, beautiful, and worthwhile things, and I find them. I treat myself and others with respect, and I do not react in kind to people who behave badly toward me. My self-worth comes not only from others, but from myself, from my caring about my own opinion and about what I do and say. For today, caring for myself is the best way I know how to care for others and to find the good in everything. You're going to share your amends letter, and you're going to have 2.5 minutes for each person to do that. Page 66 on For Today. Okay, time is up, everybody. Time's up. So I just want to mention this because I love the big book. So our purpose of this, the big book tells me, is our real purpose is to get out of our self-obsession and to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people around us. So
there you go. There you go.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to step 10. Step 10 is we continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admitted. So in the big book on page 84, and I just had this open. There we go. It says, this thought brings us to steps 10, which can suggest that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others, and in this case ourselves, is our code. So in case you didn't catch it, continue would be the theme with step 10. In the AA 12 and 12 on page 88, it says, "For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit, until he's able to admit and accept what he finds, and until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong." So it's not as though I never have a negative thought about my body. Wow, that would be like amazing. It's about that I recognize it, and just like I didn't buy into the food thoughts, that like what I really needed was the piece of pizza. I know that like obviously my mind has conjured up some story about how my skirt is fitting or what I look like or what's going on with my hair, because maybe I don't want to feel something else. It's just a distraction. And so I don't have to buy into it. And I don't have to get on the bandwagon of like, oh my God, yeah, now maybe I should lose weight. Like maybe I need to work out hard at the gym. I just go, isn't that an interesting thought? We're not going to buy into that one. But thanks for sharing. Okay. On page 345 in The Voices of Recovery, it says, quotes from the OA 12 and 12, "As we repeatedly act on step 10, we begin to see the remarkable way the steps will now, from now on, continue to remove unnecessary turmoil and pain from our lives. More gifts are in store for us as we continue working the program and experiencing the miracle of permanent recovery one day at a time." It says, "Our disease is a disease of the attitudes. However, the years I've spent in OA have shown me that although my disease is progressive, so is my recovery. When I was active in my eating disorder, I hated everything about my life. My world consisted of binges, blame, fear, shame, jealousy, and rage. I was imprisoned by unrealistic expectations of people, bitterly resenting their imperfections. I also hated myself because I couldn't stop eating. Negativity breeds hopelessness, and I was trapped. Recovery teaches me that my gratitude and serenity snowball just like my negative attitudes did. As I work the 12 steps of this program, it becomes fulfilling to focus on the good in my life. It doesn't always come easily. Sometimes I struggle to think positively. But when my attitudes slip, I know there's hope. Now my world consists of daily miracles, both large and small, that keep the light in my eyes and the lightness in my heart. Positive thinking breeds acceptance, and today I am free." So it's not as though I could go from like living in self-loathing to being like, I love myself. In fact, I remember when I was strong in the disease, some woman on some Oprah, you know, they're always on Oprah, and she was like, "You just need to love your body." And I looked at the TV and thought, is she kidding me? Everything about this thing I hate, and everything society tells me is I have every right to hate it. So I don't know where she's floating. So I had to start with where I was at, okay? And so early on, it almost literally became like, God, help me see me as you see me. And that was literal because I remember like when I lost weight, I like almost didn't recognize myself in the mirror anymore. Like I closed the medicine cabinet and be like, whoa, who was that? You know, I remember walking once with a group of women and there were three sets of legs and I wasn't sure which ones were mine. because they weren't the thunder thighs I was used to, right? So it became about, like, I literally needed to be able to see myself differently. And I thought, well, God seems to have this thing much better than I do, helped with the food thing. So maybe if I learned how to see myself the way God does, that's a good start, you know? And then I literally would be like, you know, I've always loved, like, my neck and my upper shoulders, always just loved that. And so I would look at that and be like, wow, I really like that, you know? And I could mean it. So I had to start there. Now what I do is I look at myself completely naked in the morning when I jump out of bed. And I go, okay. You know, I'm not like, wow, this is fab. You know, but have I had moments in my life where I catch myself and be like, damn, girl, you look good. Yeah, I have, you know. But, like, it's step by step. So what we want, what we're going to ask you to do is you're going to write an affirmation. Okay, and you can take this from your amends letter. Now, an affirmation, there's a couple key things I want to point out about this. It's to be written in the positive and then in the present, okay? And the word if should not be in an affirmation or when, okay? So it's not like I like my shoulders when I'm not slouching. No, that's just ixnay on the last part, right? You know, or I see myself the way God sees me. I'm willing to see myself the way God sees me. I am beautiful. Whatever your thing is, okay? But start just... The idea is not like when this, only when I do that. Like, don't make it conditional, okay? The idea is that it's something that's in the present and something that is positive. Does anybody have any questions about that? Yes.
Does it have to be just about your body, or can it be about also the person that you are, your heart, your you know, how you treat others, how, you know, the person?
Whatever's going to work for you, yeah. I'm not like the be all of like affirmation. So yes.
Did you ever feel like the parts of your body that you didn't like, you wanted to start talking to that you liked it, or is that too hard once you got?
Yeah, I mean, I have to like that. Like if I look down at something like the extra skin around my thighs or something, and I'd be like, thanks. You know, like it's not like wow, I just love that. No. But yeah, but that came, you know, like I had to start where I was first. But yes, I've learned to, like when I catch the negative thought of like where I'm going to be judging this and I go, okay, no, thank you. Yeah. So I'm going to give you 3 minutes to write the affirmation.
Okay, do not throw that out. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. And of course, you all know the short version of that is, thy will, not mine, be done. So prayer tells me in the AA 12 and 12, is raising the heart and mind to God to petition God to let us know God's will for us. We try to ask for those right things of which we and others are in the greatest need, and knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Excuse me. Meditation, it helps us envision our spiritual objective before we try to move toward it. Its objective is always the same, to improve our conscious contact with God, with his grace, wisdom, and love. And let's remember that meditation is in reality intensely practical. One of its first fruits is emotional balance. So, in the OA 12 and 12, it says, meditation gives us the much-needed practice in the art of sitting still and opening our hearts to receive spiritual nourishment. So we're going to have a 1 minute timed meditation now. letter to your, oh, sorry, a letter to yourself from God, from your higher power, regarding your body and body image. There are tissues up here. Okay? Did everybody get that? Okay. Write a letter to yourself from your higher power regarding your body and body image. Did everybody get that now? Oh, yeah. Write a letter to yourself from your higher power regarding your body and your body image. Basically, you know, God is telling you what God sees. Five minutes.
Okay, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So in the big book on page 89, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. So this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. In the AA 12 and 12 on page 125, it says, it is only by accepting and solving our problems that we can begin to get right with ourselves and with the world about us and with him who presides over us all. In the Voices of Recovery on page 16, quoting from the OA 12 and 12, page 106, it says, those of us who live this program don't simply carry the message, we are the message. Each day that we live well, we are well, and we embody the joy of recovery. When I first walked into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, I was like a candle whose light is flickering and close to going out. I was sick in mind, body, and spirit, and was hopeless. Many OA members describe OA as the last house on the block. I do not know if that's true since I do not know where the block begins or ends. I do know that what I found in OA can be found only in the heart and mind of another recovering compulsive overeater. The flickering light that I came in with became stronger and the hopelessness turned into hopefulness. I can be a living example or a dying example of how this program works. My courage to recover and my experiences in OA serve as an example to those who know me. I represent and carry the message of hope. So what we're going to do as a way of closing the workshop, with step 12, what I would encourage, my suggestion would be to put that affirmation somewhere you're going to see it on a regular basis. So for most of it, that's at the very least on the refrigerator, if not in the bathroom mirror or something. And to say it to yourself every day for 30 days. As part of the 12th step, at the end of the 30 days, maybe pass it on to somebody else. So what we're going to do now as a part of the 12 step is we're going to gather in a big circle and we're going to go around. Each person is going to share their affirmation. If you're not comfortable sharing it, you can just say pass. That's fine. And then we'll close with the serenity prayer. Yes, what's the question? The affirmation that you wrote was step 10. Yeah. Okay.
Change.